But first, Meryl Markle. Meryl Markle is a comedy legend. She's written a lot of hilarious essays, a couple of great novels, but she's probably best known for her work as the co-creator and head writer of David Letterman's groundbreaking TV show, Late Night with David Letterman. I wanted to get Markle's advice about creating groundbreaking, smart, innovative content. The first thing I wanted to know from Meryl Markle was if she's familiar with the Helsinki, Finland company Marimekko. They make all kinds of colorful fabrics, lifestyle accessories, bags, dresses. So I asked her.
You know, I am familiar with them.
So I'm wondering, because the name Marimekko is so similar to your name, Meryl Markle.
I never had anybody say that.
First time for everything. I can't help but wonder if you've talked to Target about creating a special artisanal Meryl Markle Marimekko product line along the lines of what Target did with Marimekko. They had all this colorful outdoor decor, plates, swimsuits, and even bocce ball sets. Is this something you're pursuing?
You know, I can't believe that it hasn't occurred to me. I can't think of anything that America needs more than my colorful bocce ball outfits.
Exactly.
I'm going to get on that right away, and I'm not going to cut you in for anything.
No.
Meryl Markle Marimekko would be great.
Yeah, it would be. It's a natural. You got to get on that. I would say that you are one of the most underrated comedy creators of our time. You've written many smart, hilarious essays and novels, but you're probably best known for helping David Letterman develop the distinctive comedic voice of his late-night talk show through your work as the co-creator and head writer. You invented Stupid Pet Tricks. It was your idea to do the filmed Man on the Street remote segments like Alan Alda, the man and his Chinese food. Basically, I think it's fair to say that you invented a new comic style. Was that something you were trying to do?
I found my original premise papers where we were out pitching a show for him. I was interested in a show that used Letterman to his best capacity, but was really a vehicle for ideas.
Mm-hmm.
It was what really interested me is funny ideas and funny things you hadn't seen on TV before. It seemed like TV at that particular moment was very full of cliches you had grown up with. I want to say you, I mean me.
Yeah.
TV essentially comes out of vaudeville, which preceded it, you know, radio and vaudeville. And it had all that show business kind of schmaltziness to it when I was growing up. And the big changeover came with Saturday Night Live,
yeah,
when that first went on the air, which was the first show that was conscious of people who had grown up on TV. And it was that sensibility that it seemed to me there was no going back from, and I wanted to take it and expand it. And so that was what we were trying to do, I guess, is the answer.
Yeah, and I think that's what you did. What drives you in your creative work, your essays and your novels? Besides being funny, you must have other objectives.
Well, one thing that's always driven me and actually holds me back is I don't want to repeat stuff everyone has already done. The more I take in, the more I watch, the more I think, well, that's been done, and that's been done, and that's been done, and that's been done. And people always say to me, no, but you'll do it differently. But then when I've got it in my head that it's already been done, I don't want to. So I wait until I feel like I've got an original angle on stuff. Like right now, I'm not writing any more talking dogs because so much talking dog stuff came out between when I was interested in it and now that I feel like it's been done. It's been done, you know. You know, this is the weirdest thing I have to contribute is, you know, I think I may have done the first commercial dog video.
Oh, really?
Because on Letterman, I was making them, these things filmed by Bob the Dog.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah.
And the only reason I was the first is I had a camera and interest in dogs. Soon everybody had a camera. But at that time, you had to be working for a show or else be an amateur filmmaker to be putting that kind of stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
So it was another one of those refillable segments. You know, I mean, I started making stuff about dogs. It was in the early 80s. There were some things about dogs in the art world, but there was nothing commercial. And now, of course, it's, you know.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah.
But it's weird that I was basically ground zero.
Right. You helped create, in large part, the dog industrial complex, or big dog, or big bark, whatever we want to call it.
Yeah, I did. That and Marimekko.
Yeah.
Marimekko on that.
Yeah. Can you give me an example of any one of your creative works that you think really illustrates the Meryl Markle, I almost said Marimekko, the Meryl Markle surprising angle or personal twist?
Well, just to go way back, I once wrote a piece that got a lot of play. It was a piece about hanging out as a dog with my dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Helping them break out through the fence and all of stuff like that. So I could better understand them living life as they did, trying to get food off the counter. And that's an angle, I guess. You know, I look really hard for things that either seem personally explorative or, like, I wrote a piece not so long ago about I have a humane rat trap. Mm-hmm. And I was, for a while, we had rats here, and I was trying to capture them humanely and then would have to relocate them. Because when you've bothered to catch a rat humanely, you, don't forget, wind up with a rat. In the beginning, I just sort of walked the rat down the street and took him to a vacant lot and set him free, mm-hmm. hearing Born Free playing in my head.
Yeah.
But later I read an article on rats that they have a 3D mapping system that lets them remember and return to anything within a radius of, I think it's 3 miles.
Oh, great.
It might even be 5 miles.
Great.
So you have to actually drive them 3 to 5 miles further than you would. You can't just walk them down the street. And in fact, that rat came back to my house and I caught him again. So I drove him 5 miles to another place. And that occurred to me as something so eccentric and semi-ridiculous, yet meaningful to me, that I wrote a piece about that.
So how do you find a balance between what you think is funny and what you think your readers or your audience will find funny? Or do you personally just worry about what you think is funny and surprising and hope that the reader or the audience will find it funny too?
It's hard enough to just focus on what you find funny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can't predict what somebody else is going to find funny. If you start second-guessing people, you plain old cannot second-guess people. You're going to be doing a terrible job at it. When I first moved to Los Angeles a billion years ago, I was trying to get a job in traditional sitcoms that I hated. And I thought, okay, the reason these sitcoms are horrible is because somebody like me didn't come in and help them be funnier. And then I realized, no, they are successful because people who write them actually think they're great, not horrible. And I couldn't write those sitcoms because when I would try to write like that, I'd be doing a parody of it because I didn't actually think it's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't call a thing unfunny if it's getting big laughs. You can say it's not funny to you, but it's certainly funny if it, like, there are many things I don't find funny. In fact, sadly, I'd say most of what America loves, I don't find all that great.
Yeah, me too.
I'm eccentric. I didn't like La La Land. I only made it through 2 songs.
Oh, wow. So what advice would you have for me in making this new show, this new public radio pilot podcast that I'm working on, Beta? Obviously, the best way to make it funny, innovative, and successful would be to hire you to host it.
Oh, I cost a pretty penny.
However, you could make the case that I can't afford not to do that.
You can't afford not to do
it. No, exactly, yes.
Merrim Meckel.
Yeah, Merrim Meckel.
Just remember that joke.
Yeah, see, Beta with Merrill Markle.
Yeah. Well, you've got your sponsor with Merrim Meckel.
Exactly. There's our underwriter. The great comedy writer George Meyer described your style as sly and playful during the time you were working on Late Night with...
And that's how I would describe the great comedy writer George Meyer.
There you go, yeah.
Sly and playful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. George went on to say that you were often going for more a mood and a tone. You like to create a loopy 3 minutes that was essentially silly or a fool's errand. Do you think that's the kind of thing that could work on public radio and in a podcast?
I don't know. It's a question of whether you can get public radio to say yes to it. I worked in public radio very, very briefly, and they had a lot of rules.
Yeah.
A lot of things you're not allowed to do. I remember a particular thing I did that I thought was hilarious. It was quickly excised from the show.
What was it?
It had to do with making fun of somebody was writing a eulogy for how sad they were that their kid was going off to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing the inner critic going, ah, you're glad to get rid of that guy. They didn't think that was funny at all.
Oh, jeez, okay. So these days, we're living in an attention economy in which attention is our most valuable resource, and there are all these different companies competing for our attention, our eyeballs, and even our eardrums. And it makes me think of something that the entrepreneur and author Seth Godin once said, that the remarkable is almost always new and untested, fresh and risky. I think that's very true of your work. What do you think?
I don't know. I'll go ahead and say yes. I'm not sure what the question was. Is it remarkable, fresh, and risky?
Does that ring true with you, that the remarkable is almost always new and untested, fresh and risky? Do you see your work as being new and untested?
Well, yeah, you know, I enjoy seeing that. I like it to be smart, though. I don't like fresh, risky, and stupid.
No, no, smart. Yeah, there's too much stupid out there. So
what I tend to really like is, having analyzed it myself, I like a combination of silly and cerebral.
Mm.
I don't like either one without the other as well. But the two together are my favorite thing.
That's comedy writer and comedy legend Meryl Marco.